California is way out in front of most other states in setting aggressive targets for curbing the release of greenhouse gases, GHG, the kind that contribute to the warming of the planet. And a recent scientific paper shows that differences in management of land can help with the process. The paper recently published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, is very clear in its title alone. Ecosystem management and land conservation can substantially contribute to California's climate mitigation goals. It lists four authors, D. Richard Cameron, David C. Marvin, Jonathan M. Remukal, and Michelle Passero. Two of them are with us now to talk about how land conservation and management can help California work to defeat climate change. From the Nature Conservancy California chapter, D. Richard Cameron is the Associate Director of Science. Hi, Richard.
Hi there. Good morning. You can call me Dick.
Dick. Okay, thanks. And Michelle Passero is with us as well. She's the Senior Climate Policy Advisor for the Nature Conservancy California chapter. Good to have you here, Michelle.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
So, starting point, do people tend to think about greenhouse gas reductions just in terms of what is released rather than other processes that are possible, Dick?
In terms of the emissions from the state?
Well, just into, yeah, I mean, when people think about greenhouse gases, I think they're thinking more in terms of slowing them down at the source rather than other methods of mitigation.
Yeah, typically the way that the greenhouse gas emissions reductions are approached is either by preventing future emissions from things like the transportation sector, the electricity sector, things like that. It's rare to, and this is unique to ecosystems to some degree, it's rare to think of reversing climate change by increasing carbon sequestration in ecosystems. And so that's a unique and novel component to land-based management, that you can actually increase CO2 drawdown into soil and vegetation.
Michelle, let's talk about this as a policy thing before we get into the science of it. And is it sort of down the list of remedies, or is ecosystem management and mitigation a little bit higher on the list?
You know, it is a little further down the list, although I have to say that I think that is changing. And like you mentioned, I think most people and a lot of decision makers, you know, you immediately think of smokestacks and tailpipes as you know, the areas or the sectors that where we need to reduce emissions, which is true. And slowly, though, I think people are starting to realize and understand a little bit more about our forests and our land base, that they have an important role to play. It's not just about reducing the emissions, but managing and protecting land so they can both minimize emissions that may come from the land base, but also do it in such a way that can actually pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and store it.
So, Dick Cameron, let's talk about the mechanisms there then. Carbon sequestration, I mean, this already takes place. It's a matter of just trying to give it more places that happen, I imagine. But where does it go on, and how important is it?
Well, the carbon cycle is obviously very important, and you're right. Ecosystems do take in CO2 and sequester it into organic matter in soils, vegetation, biomass. So it is already happening. And as Michelle mentioned, when you clear land, or when you change from, say, a forest to an agricultural land use, you're going to release that carbon, both through the removal of the trees and the above ground carbon, as well as the disturbance of the soil. So it's certainly a critical ecological cycle and physical cycle in ecosystems. But what we've done by clearing land and by seeing the impacts of climate change with things like more frequent fire, we've actually seen a net increase in terms of overall emissions from the landscapes.
All right. So the places that could sequester carbon are generally being altered or changed in ways that keep them from sequestering carbon.
Yeah, and the focus of our study was really understanding for the first time what's the potential across a range of different types of activities. So we looked not only at forests, but things like wetland restoration, managing grasslands differently. And so that was really the novel component of the study, was sort of looking across a number of different ecosystem types and quantifying the potential of, you know, if you change management or if you prevent the conversion of those lands, what does that add up to?
Okay, yeah, I want to get into the more specifics about that in just a moment. We're talking to two people from the Nature Conservancy California chapter. Dick Cameron's the Associate Director of Science. Michelle Passero is the Senior Climate Policy Advisor. And they are two of the authors for a paper called Ecosystem Management and Land Conservation Can Substantially Contribute to California's Climate Mitigation Goals. This is a conversation you're welcome to join if you have some issues on mind, things in mind about carbon sequestration and how it should be approached. We'd like to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's step back for just a second, Michelle, and give us the California picture, because California is kind of out there in front with AB 32, which was meant to do what?
AB 32, which was adopted back in 2006, sets a 2020 greenhouse gas climate goal for California to reduce its economy-wide greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020. And you may get into this, but you know, subsequently and more recently, California extended that goal out to 2030 to deepen the reductions an additional 40% below 1990 levels by the year 2030.
All right, so a couple of steps in here. Voters opted not to repeal Assembly Bill 32 in 2010. That was Proposition 23. Which was interesting because the supporters called it the California Jobs Initiative and opponents called it the Dirty Energy Proposition. But so Assembly Bill 32 was not repealed. So you're saying now that the 2020 goals have been pushed back, or in addition to those, we now have 2030 goals?
In addition. Mm-hmm. So it's considered an interim goal. And we do, you know, these are a lot of numbers right now that we're throwing out there, but we do have an even longer term goal for 2050, that's been developed by executive order, which is 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. So the idea behind this goal for 2030 was to set some kind of interim goal so that the state can have a better pathway for achieving even longer, deeper reductions by the year 2050.
The original targets for 2020, are we going to miss those?
No, the state, in fact, is on target for meeting its 2020 obligation, if not doing a little bit better.
Which is taking it back to 1990 levels then?
Yes.
Wow, that's impressive. Was this anticipated at all? I mean, did it look like it was going to be close for a while, or was it always looking in pretty good shape?
No, I think it's been a steady drumbeat toward 2020. So at least from my perspective, it did not appear that the state was going to miss that opportunity. And the state has developed a whole suite of incentives and regulations to help, meet that target, and we're doing well and growing the economy at the same time.
The paper references sub-national jurisdictions, meaning states and smaller political entities. Has California set the most aggressive reduction targets in the country?
Yeah, California is one of really the only state in the United States that has an economy-wide goal. In New England, there's another initiative among New England states. I think it's about nine states now, called the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, where those states are seeking to reduce emissions from the energy sector. But it's not nearly as comprehensive as what California has chosen to do.
Okay, so California indeed way out in front with the efforts. So let me come back to the science part of this, Dick Cameron. And in the efforts at ecosystem management and land conservation, is there any low-hanging fruit, so small efforts that give you big results?
Yeah, one of them is wetland restoration. So we were surprised to see that. What we did is we looked in the scientific literature in terms of the per acre estimate in terms of carbon sequestration under a range of uncertainty, for example, and restoring things like corn in the California Delta as well as pastures to manage wetlands represents one of the highest per acre sequestration potentials that we looked at.
Restoring corn?
Sorry?
You said restoring corn?
Yeah, so basically, instead of growing corn, removing the corn and restoring wetlands.
Ah, okay.
And so actually taking agricultural production and turning it into the ecosystem.
How specific does the science get? I mean, do you know that certain plants in grasslands or wetlands would be better than others at sequestering carbon?
Yeah, it's a really active area of research, and so it's emerging, and there's papers that kind of reshape the thinking as we get into it. But yeah, there are plants, tules, for example, in California represent a very fast-growing plant that is a component. component of wetlands naturally. And so having those in terms of the above-ground biomass, as well as the soil in wetlands, you've probably heard of peat soil. Mm-hmm. So our California Delta's got some of the highest soil carbon sequestration of the whole state. And that's because of that peat soil accumulates very quickly when it's restored to wetland function.
So wetlands and grasslands, certainly. But given the general trend, though, I mean, is the forest still far above the other landforms in its ability to sequester carbon?
Yeah, in terms of overall reduction, so about 90% of the above-ground carbon is stored in forests and woodlands. And so it's still far and away, in terms of above-ground stores, the highest carbon density of all of them. And we found in the paper that, you know, there was the potential across all the activities that we looked at, about three-quarters actually were coming from either changes in forest management or reforestation. And so while the per-acre estimates of sequestration were a little bit lower than things like wetlands, overall they represented the largest potential.
Now, is California gaining forest land? Is it still losing forest land as land is logged? I mean, what's the general trend?
I think the overall trend in things like conifer forest coverage is actually not that great. I think there's a slight decline. The thing that's really reshaping forests is things like the drought and beetle kill. We have over 100 million dead trees now. Especially concentrated in places like the southern Sierra Nevada, as well as fire. So you have changes in forest coverage due to those types of disturbances. In many cases, they'll come back as forests, but that's a kind of a looming question with climate change.
About whether they'll be able to regenerate as forest?
Yeah, exactly. In places where you've got persistent drought or really changes in temperature, there are some areas where there's a potential for that to be sort of a state change, where it comes back as shrubland or some other ecosystem type.
And Michelle Passero, are there incentives? I mean, does the original Assembly Bill 32 do anything about getting incentives out there for people to preserve forest land or anything else? That I mean, is there any sort of land management component to the original AB 32?
Yes, there is. And this is, again, a place where California really has shown significant leadership. As part of, there's a whole package of policies that the state is implementing to help meet its long-term goals. One program, and many of the listeners may have heard of it, is called a market-based program or a greenhouse gas cap-and-trade program. And cap entities such as the energy sector, power plants, are capped to reduce their emissions, as well as refineries, and they receive permits to represent their cap and the declining emissions that need to happen over time. And they're allowed to trade those permits to help meet their goals. As part of that program, too, they're allowed to invest about 8%, up to 8% of their obligation. They can invest in forests, in forest conservation, in forest restoration, in avoiding the conversion of forests to other uses as a way to help meet their greenhouse gas reduction obligation. And there's been over 50 million credits, they call them credits in terms of what the reductions from forests. About 50 million have been credited through the program so far. So there's a number of landowners in California and even outside of California participating in the program and receiving funding, maybe about anywhere from $10 to $12 a ton of carbon dioxide reduction to help the state meet its greenhouse gas reduction goal. And then there's another piece in California's program that it's called the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. And the state is investing a portion of those funds in natural resource conservation, including forests and wetlands, agricultural conservation, rangeland conservation, and urban forestry. So there's two different ways right now where incentives are available to landowners to manage differently, to protect their properties, their way of life, and also help reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
And what are the revenue sources for things like the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund?
That also comes out of the greenhouse gas, that comes out of the cap and trade program. Mm-hmm. So those entities that I mentioned that are capped under the cap and trade program, there is an auction of the permits that they receive. And that auction has generated over $5 billion to date. And this is dating back to maybe about 2013. And that money goes into a fund called the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. And they're supposed to be used to invest in different kinds of activities across the economy to help reduce emissions. And so a portion of that is invested in forests and wetlands and ranches and farms and urban forestry. And last year, for the 2017-2018 fiscal year, it's been the highest amount of money dedicated to our natural resources. Over about $400 million has been dedicated to California's resources to help meet the state's long-term climate goals.
That is impressive. We were talking about California and its effort to reduce climate-changing greenhouse gases. We're talking specifically about a report that involves two of our guests here. Ecosystem management and land conservation can substantially contribute to California's climate mitigation goals. Michelle Passero and Dick Cameron are both with the Nature Conservancy. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, I understand in southwest Washington State and maybe in northwest Oregon that there is some kind of a program where they pay private landowners, forest landowners, to manage their holdings in such a way to increase carbon sequestration. If they know about this, could they comment on it?
All right, thanks for that, Carter. Appreciate it. And well, do you know about it in outside of California, and is there a program similar to it within California, Michelle?
Well, I'm forgetting the name of the program right now, but there was legislation, at least in Oregon, and perhaps it extends to southwest Washington, and it pertained to the siting of new energy facilities. And with each new facility, there is a requirement to offset or mitigate the emissions associated with it. I don't know if it's still happening. My understanding, I think it's the Climate Trust. It used to be called the Oregon Climate Trust. Mm-hmm. So it may be that program that you are thinking about. But I should also mention that California's cap-and-trade program, greenhouse gas cap-and-trade program, does allow for investments in forest activities outside of California throughout the United States and Alaska. So that is another program that extends to Oregon and Washington as well.
Oh, so in a sense, doing the carbon sequestration outside the borders of California?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's take another call here. Wayne in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Michelle Passero and Dick Cameron.
Hi. We've got a little lumber remanufacturing business, and we've been making biochar on a test level and wondering about what the credits are looking like for making biochar out of wood waste.
Biochar, is that a term you're familiar with, Richard Cameron?
Yeah, biochar. I don't believe there are, Michelle, do you know if there are protocols that have been developed for biochar in a voluntary offset market?
I think there is active work around developing in the voluntary market around biochar, and it could be the American Carbon Registry. There is not a protocol yet for biochar in California's regulatory program, but I believe there's one under development, if not approved, for the voluntary market, and American Carbon Registry would be the one I would look at.
And biochar is what?
Biochar is, I believe, adding wood that's been essentially turned into charcoal into the soil, and the idea is that you're basically taking a source of carbon and turning it into the soil, and that increases things like water holding capacity because that the wood that's tilled into the soil or spread across the soil will retain moisture better, as well as serving to store that carbon underground. And maybe in some cases, I'm not sure if biochar actually stimulates the net primary productivity insofar that it leads to increased plant growth as well.
Okay. I appreciate the explanation on that. So, Dick Cameron, you're the lead author of this study. Ecosystem management and land conservation can substantially contribute to California's climate mitigation goals. California's a big state with a lot of people and a lot of land. I mean, did you have to narrow the focus to, or pick parts of California? Or, I mean, what did you do to pull this together?
Yeah, good question. It is, it was an ambitious effort. And what we did is there's a number of different activities that people have looked at over the years, and many of them, frankly, are in agricultural systems. So there's a really complementary area of research where people are looking into how to manage soils differently, how to grow crops differently, how to extend rotation times, things like that. Our primary focus really was in ecosystems, natural ecosystems, and looking at the scientific literature for things that provided what we call co-benefits, so ways of increasing habitat quality or water holding capacity, like I talked about, but also have evidence that they can increase carbon sequestration. So we looked into the scientific literature and then sort of sifted and filtered and prioritized the activities that we ended up looking at. And so we ended up looking at, like I said, a number of different activities across ecosystem types, such as changes to forest management, preventing the conversion of grasslands to agricultural types. And with that scientific literature, we were able to estimate, you know, the total reduction potential under three different scenarios.
All right. So the report really does take it far beyond the idea of smokestacks and tailpipes, as Michelle pointed out. And again, it's called Ecosystem Management and Land Conservation Can Substantially Contribute to California's Climate Mitigation Goals. It's in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Dick Cameron, the Associate Director of Science at the Nature Conservancy California Chapter, the lead author. Michelle Passero, one of the other three. She is the Senior Climate Policy Advisor for the Nature Conservancy California Chapter. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
All right, take care.